So it seems that perhaps only humans can be magicians.
As opposed to what, Rob?
That we can step outside, and we have a capacity to step outside what we are in a way that...
Yeah, one of the differences, say, between humans and angels?
Animals I was talking about, like...
Well, animals don't have reflective minds in a certain sense, so they can't do that. But one of the
very human is unique as a living species.
So. Well, the particular quality, I suppose what the Kabbalah would say, those are the particular qualities of human beings, is that they can bridge between all the different layers of existence. Mm. So you can meet great angelic beings who can do extraordinary things, but haven't the capacity to, because they just don't operate in that way, of to be with the confused human experience. You know, that's why if you ask an angel, what should I do? What was the name of that brilliant film? Do you remember the name of that film, Ali, about angels, where the just showed how kind of extreme angels are? I can't remember the name of the film. Anyway, angels are kind of extreme. So when if you're tuning into an angel, they're kind of, an angel's got its mission. Right, so an angel of justice will want to, will see the expression of justice as the most important thing, no matter the cost of that justice. Now, human being will of course feel that, but will also be able to, by bridging into the complexity and the confusion of human life, will understand at times the need for injustice, or the need to not tell the truth, or the need to not do the apparently right thing, because the consequences of that will be more painful and more difficult than the apparently right thing. So angels, powerful beings though they are, can, and certainly archangels, because they operate at this massive scale, they cannot apply themselves to the particularity that human beings can. So human beings have the capacity, the Kabbalah would say, to be both very particular and very immediate and very universal. So the particular quality of the human being is to be the living bridge between all the layers of existence. Our problem is that because we have become constricted to only a part of our nature, to the lower triangle of the tree perhaps, is that we don't have a great deal of access to the more universal aspects of our being. But as one of the things that's always very interesting when you come across very developed spiritual beings is how human they are. Well, so the few people I've met who I've felt are really deeply developed people is they are developed at all levels. They're kind, they're connected, and they're awesome. Right, so they have both these kind of qualities, as opposed to the, you know, fantasy of developed people who are becoming inhuman or unhuman. And it's because human development, if it's going to develop, operates at all levels simultaneously. I can't remember how we got into this, actually, what I was going to talk about before. Right, so...
Between angels and humans.
Yes, I've no idea how we got into angels and humans.
You just were going to record it when you were talking about, was it the movement to get it to be now?
Yeah, we started to talk about that, and we were talking about, that's right, we were talking about the art of magic, really, the practice of magic. That's right. So basically what we're looking at in this weekend, in this path, is being the magician, being the mystical magician, and being able to bridge between the non-dual and the dual. And the particular quality that you find, I mean, the next time we're going to look at the path of the fool, which is a more mystical less formed version of this path. But the emphasis in this path is on the shaping and the working with and the creation of the living forms. So the magician, which is an androgynous figure truly, is in certain sense a maternal figure. So in contrast to the, you know, the, some of the cultural images of magicians being wise, you know, wise old men, the archetype in this way of thinking, the deep magician is a mother, and who generates and nurtures the forms of life. In the Egyptian tradition, is the figure is the Geruma, who is the man or woman of silence, who is seen as like a living tree that brings forth the fruit of the universe and irrigates the universe. So what we're looking at when we look at the tarot trump, the magician, we're looking at this place of standing and allowing the flow of the universe through us, but working with these qualities of the elements of fire and water, of air and earth, of yud, of hay, of vav, of hay final. And as we go through, you know, tomorrow we'll do that. We'll look at the connection to the element of air and the connection to the element of earth. So we will have covered all four of these things. But what we're looking at fundamentally is the capacity to conceive and give birth to the forms of the universe. So Bina, as the universal mother, is constantly generating the shapes, the forms that then go on to enter into space and time and to live through their life cycle. Now the Book of Tokens poem talks about this presence of the divine with us at all stages, from conception to continuance to ending. And so this is it's this practice of being present with, allowing the life of the universe to move through us, contemplating the life of the universe, and receiving the forms back as they're destroyed and as they return back into the bosom of the mother. Now obviously, there's lots of different ways of describing this. This is the way the Hermetic Kabbalah describes it, as this form of the magician. And one of the things it does is to use the tarot pack as a way of being able to bring together a lot of images and ideas and teachings. Because the principal thing that we have in the tarot pack is the combination. So we have the pattern of the major trumps that are all the paths of the tree, the 22 paths, and then we have the numeral cards that are 1 to 10 that apply to the spheres of the tree of life. And what we also have are the letters of the name. So because we have the yud, which are wands, the hay, which are cups, the vav, which is swords, and the hay final, which are the coins or pentacles. So what you have in the tarot pack is a complete Kabbalah that you can kind of work with. Because the tarot trumps, which are these extraordinary multi-level kind of images that show us, well, what is the activity that happens in between any two sephirot. So in this case, the activity is between Keter and Bina, between that sense of pure awareness and the manifestation of the universe. So we're given this image of let me just come back to that image of the magician card. Okay. So what we're given here is this image of the infinite sort of background of light. And then this transitional image of the magician performing the work of magic. And what we see in this is this, as I say, androgynous form bringing into being the forms of the universe, bringing together, working with the energy of desire, which is the rose, in the red robe, working with location in time and space, bringing the infinite energies of the Lemon's Gate into the field of attention, using the tools of the letters of the name, of the, if you like, the kind of the fiery will, the flowing water, the clarity of the sword, the crystallization embodiment of the pentacle. So the, and likewise, each one of the tarot, each one of the paths that we've looked at have their tarot trump, which summarizes and indicates the kind of the work that's happening in between these two sephirot. Now, when we look at the numeral cards, they show, so the, of course, the Keter, the cards of the four aces. In the Bina, it's the four threes. So what we have as well, I'll just stop this bit now. What we have as well really is that in the numeral cards we have the sense of the archetypes of the Sephirot. Which I'll talk again a bit more tomorrow because it's late in the day to start getting into numerical philosophy. So we'll look at that a bit tomorrow. The tarot pack is a sort of great mystery in a way, I think, right? Because there's all kinds of theories, but it turns up in Renaissance Italy, and it turns up first of all in quite elaborate elite packs. Hand painted with gold leaf, and like packs like the Visconti's Volvo pack that were held by elite Renaissance families. And we have to remember when this happened, right? Because this is a time when Renaissance Italy is receiving the all kinds of underground wisdom. So it's receiving the Hermetica from the Arab learning, it's receiving the teachings of Plato and the Greek learning, all of which has been lost in Europe. It's receiving the Kabbalah. Now, so we will never exactly know what's gone on, because a lot of this is secret. There's lots of tension between the Italian city-states and the church, because the city-states are independent, and in particular because of the Lorenzo Magnifico, the great Medici patron who supported the Renaissance Magi. There's a lot going on politically between the Holy Roman Empire, the Pope, and these independent states that are striking out in new directions, that are creating what later becomes the kind of the modern Kabbalah, the Hermetic Kabbalah. Now, somewhere in the middle of all that, the tarot pack appears. Now, the other thing that appears round about that time is that there's the particular tree of life that we've been working on, the Hermetic tree of life. It's one of many that you find within Judaism, but it's a very it's a particular form that has these 22 paths, 10 spheres, and this idea of the and works incredibly well with the tarot. Now, the original, origination of the Tree of Life has nothing at all to do with Torah. It's all to do with Hebrew letters, and there are lots of different trees of life. As I said, there's very complex ones, very simple ones. There's ones that are just circular, concentric circles. There's others that are very complex tree-like shapes, branching shapes. But the one in the we deal with mostly is because it was collected by the Jesuit and Athesius Kircher, and it becomes a kind of a standard tree for what we might call the Christian Kabbalah or the Western Hermetic Kabbalah. And somewhere along the line, this gets associated with the tarot. And more than that, it works. So we're never going to know, but it feels kind of likely, because the standard, because in the beginning when the tarot comes about, there's lots of different tarots. They're called tarichi packs, and they've got all kinds of different numbers and sort of in numbers of cards, I mean numbers of trumps as well. So out of all that melange, out of all that kind of all this stuff going on, you end up with a tarot pack that has 22 trumps, has numeral cards, and then and a series of court cards, which work from a hermetic occultist point of view work really well in terms of working with this art of magic that we're looking at. The numerical cards give us the numerical philosophy of the Sephirot, the 1 to 10, the great archetypes. The 22 trumps give us the interactions between these archetypes. The four suits give us the letters of the name. They give us the four worlds of the Kabbalah, which is the world of Asiya, which is the world of earth, the world of Yetzirah, which is the world of air and swords, the world of Beria, which is cups and water, and the world of fire, which is Atzulit and wands. So there's a way in which now, who knows how this developed, but if you'd set out to develop a pack of images and ideas that would work brilliantly well with the Kircher tree, well, this is it. Works perfectly. And then the court cards give us the way the letters of the name interplay with each other. Because you've got, if you look at the court cards, you've got the king, the queen, the page, the knight and the page. So those titles are king, queen. King is Yod, queen is Hay, knight is Vav, page is Hay final. Also, wands is Yod, cups is Hay, swords is Vav, pentacles is Hay final. That gives you a way of subdividing elemental categories against each other and working with the subtleties of that. So what you end up with is this mandala that can be very simple. That can be Yud He Vav He Shin. That can be a tree of 10 spheres and 22 paths. That can be a tree that operates on four levels. So it can be as complex or as simple as you need it to be, depending on what you're doing. And and also, it's a pack of cards you can keep in your pocket. It looks like a board game. It looks like a game that doesn't look in any way sinister or difficult. So you have a complete philosophy, a complete contemplation system in your pocket. So we'll never know who created this, but I find it very hard to imagine it's just luck, because it's so precise. Obviously, we are, the pack that people mainly would have worked with in the beginning is the Marseille pack. So the images are not as easy to match with these processes, but they still work. I mean, I worked with Marseille pack for many years. I love it. It's very simple. It's very kind of direct. The Waite Smith pack is a work of genius, really. It has a lot of subtle Kabbalistic subtlety with it, as you'd expect, because it was designed by Arthur Edward Waite and painted by Pamela Coleman Smith, who knew, these people knew what they were doing. The Thoth pack of Crowley is another brilliant spin on it in a different direction that gives us a whole load of other sets of ideas. So in a certain sense, because the work of magic at the end is the ability to connect the universal with the particular to create the art of the living image, which functions as an icon, which bridges between, if you like, the dualistic world and the non-dual world. And so what you have in the Tarot Pack, what you have in the Tree of Life, is a form that can hold us lightly, that enables us to make that bridging and in whatever direction. So if we're moving from the non-dual into the dual, into that deconstructive place, if we're moving from the non-dual into the dual, into that creative place where we manifest that the will and the image and the conjunction of will and love in the process of transmission and embodiment. And you know what you see at the top of the Tree of Life when we look at this, because actually the thing about the top of the Tree of Life where we're working now, these are the most fundamental places. We could flip it upside down, because these are the roots of the tree, really. So the deep awareness is the root of the tree. And one of the things that's so interesting about the way these things work is the continual conjunction of opposites. So we're looking principally at the movement from awareness to love. But the path that joins it is all to do with will and direction. The other path, we're looking at the movement from awareness to will. The path that connects them is the spontaneous, chaotic, creative fool who has no direction. Now the point of these images, the point of these particular connections, is they are intended to disrupt the part of our mind that wants everything neat and tidy, that wants to take us away from paradox. It will work much better from the linear parts of our mind if these two trumps are swapped. So if the fool was coming down into the spontaneous and delightful fool is coming into the love of Mina, that's a much easier linear process. If the magician, who is the manifest of will, is coming from Keter into Chokmah, well, again, that's much easier, much more that fits in our mind. But no, that isn't it. That doesn't work. Because what is important here is the constant conjunction of opposites, the constant disruption of that linearity, so that we enter into the mystery, and so that the mystery manifests through us. Ernest used to talk about Ernest Putnam used to talk about the divine as the divine artist, but as an artist who is not separate from that which he is creating. Often what is the image of the fool, of the divine as the fool stepping into manifestation, but a deeper image is of the divine as an artist, completely involved and not separate from the materials of that he, she, it is working with. So the thatness of the divine is constantly creative, constantly curious, constantly playful, constantly working with new possibilities, new conjunctions, new awarenesses. So this sense, you find it in the Christian mystics. Mr. Eckhart would talk about the green life of the divine, the greenness of the Hildegard of Bingen also talk about this, the greening of the divine life, this fresh newness, like a lamb bouncing around, creating new things. So the encounter really with the divine is the encounter with this powerful, playful, constantly curious creativity that's constantly kind but constantly inviting us to step more and more deeply into the nature of things. So we've got about 10 minutes left. Is there anything that's on anybody's mind that I need to pay attention to before we stop?
Can I ask a question?
Yep.
Well, I sort of find myself wondering why we've got to get involved. Well, I think we kind of enter these conversations, I suppose, with spiritual realms and things because we're suffering in some way. But now we're kind of in this other part of the tree. I sort of feel like, well, why have I got to get involved at all? It's kind of happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a case of like not getting, maybe I'm getting it wrong. Seems like a case of not getting involved, not really getting involved. And
it depends on what we mean by involved, doesn't it? So in a certain sense, this involvement, I suppose if we want to use that word, in this level is to relax into it. So at that level, we don't have to get involved. It's not us getting involved with it. Where the invitation, if we want to, is to relax into this presence and to enjoy that connection. So I suppose ultimately we the only reason to get involved in whatever we mean that is because we want to.
Yeah, maybe it's not quite the right word. It sort of feels a little bit like I'm not really quite sure, like, where is my motivation and will now anymore? Okay. Sort of all dissolved into something.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
What does that mean? What is what for you is your motivation and will, Holly? What is that? What are you meaning when you use those words?
I wish I knew. Well, it's different. They're different in response to different things, isn't it? That's maybe why this is a bit puzzling to me.
Okay.
I suppose I feel like maybe, and perhaps I'm misunderstanding, but I sort of feel like this is much more about whatever it is. I don't know how else to describe it, but the divine. The divine knows, the divine does, and the divine manifests. And so I've just kind of got no need to have a will or a motivation other than once I've kind of believed that it's happening, that it happens, that it's in everything and everyone, even in Trump, even in wars, even in... I feel a bit kind of Not nihilistic exactly, but
that would be surrendered, wouldn't it? So when you're really in that experience, I think the question is if you're in that experience. I mean, for me, that experience comes and goes. So when I think absolutely when I am in that surrendered place, no, of course there's no will. There is just surrender. You know, and at other times when I'm not in that place, there's much more sense of Ian and Ian's will and Ian's dialogue with the divine. So I think for me, it's a sort of spectrum in that sense, really. But I think you're completely right. In that moment when you're at one with, when you're touching into that, no, there's no independent will. Of course not. How could there be?
But it's almost like there is this sort of where I sort of felt like something kind of flickers, a sense of like maybe the habitual sense of self goes, oh, and I must have a purpose, I must have a.
Yeah, totally.
No. So I'm kind of like, no, I don't, forget it.
Well, I think that's right. I think that is that almost that movement, right? So there is that moment where you touch into surrender, and then there is that push back from that, that kind of which is into slightly more separated. And so there was, you know, this level, for sure, that is the dialogue. That's the continual invitation, is to let go and to drop into that, really. Which, you know, call it the divine, call it the beloved, or whatever we will. But it is, you know, just as in the Book of Tokens meditation, it is the surrender into that which does, allowing ourselves to be carried by that. So no, not having an independent will, becoming unified with that mystery, really.
And it's very moment to moment, and also timeless, like not having time.
Yeah. Well, both, exactly that. So it's beyond time, of course. And as you say, it's moment to moment. You move into it, you move out of it.
Can I come in, or do I still?
Yeah, go.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
Go, come in.
The High Priestess has been in my mind almost from the start of the day, and I'm getting a feeling, have we done the 13th path?
Yeah, we have. We did that much earlier on.
When was it?
Well, I can't remember exactly when, Duncan, but because it was making the connections. It was when we were making the connections from Tiferet, because basically, so there was a whole series. So we were looking at the connection between. One weekend we did the connection between Tiferet and Gebura, then Tiferet and Gedula, and then the third one was Tiferet and Ketum, basically. Yeah.
So it's
to bridge year two and three.
What's that?
I think we did it to bridge year two and three.
Yeah.
As we moved up. So I think it was the first one we did possibly this year, or the last one we did.
It's very likely. Yes, I think you're right, Fefe, actually, now that I remember. It was either the last one of year two or the beginning one of year three. So, yeah.
Okay.
The different triangle. What are they called?
The middle triangle. So basically, we were looking at the connection between the middle triangle and the upper triangle.
Okay, cool, I'll find it. Great,
Thank you. Can I ask, would you recommend, if we wanted to look at the Marseille tarot deck, would you say that was useful, and would you recommend a certain pack?
I'd get the cheapest one. There's loads of Marseille tarot. So the Marseille tarot pack, it's not pretty, right? It is interesting to get a sense of where the tarot was historically before. Unfortunately, these days there's a bit of a cult of the Marseille. There's lots of different versions of the Marseille tarot. Some are very expensive. They're all pretty much the same because they're just. Because you're living last, we're going to have a look. Just going to look downtown and have a look and see if there's a pack you fancy. You don't need it. I mean, certainly the Smith-Waite pack is from our point of view, is much better. It's just a historical kind of interest. So I wouldn't. But people do make a bit of a thing of they've got the special ones, but they all look the same, truthfully, because they were basically mass-produced. The Marseille tarot, they were printed, and they were used as tarot game cards as well. So a lot of the time. But yeah, good
it seems in terms of different qualities from the cards, getting the top pack would be more sensible because it brings in so many extra elements, whereas I think the right away, am I right? It was, must have been informed by the Marseille pack.
Well, they're all informed by the Marseille pack, and that's from that sense, because that's, you know, the Marseille and the Italian packs are the origins of all of them. I mean, the only problem with the Thoth pack is you have to deal with Crowley's very particular philosophy, because there's a lot of that in there. Overall, the best back, I think, is probably the Waite-Smith. I mean, because it links to the older traditions. It's beautiful artwork. If you don't like the artwork of the Waite-Smith, then maybe try the Marseille or something. I would, because it's more neutral. I do love the Thoth back, but then I love Crowley. You have to kind of like Crowley's work a bit to like the Thoth back, obviously. As I've just written a book on Crowley, I'm certainly there are shortcomings, but I really do like his philosophy and ideas. So for me, the Thoth pack works really well. But
how we compare them, I'm really struck by the fluidity and the incredible movement.
Well, the thing about that pack, and it's not to Crowley's credit, it's to Lady Frieda Harris, who was the artist, who just did an extraordinary job on it. Really, I mean, he did two interesting images, and so to be fair to him, his designs were good. But the reason why it's such a great pack is she was such an extraordinary artist. So the projective geometry she does in the background of all those cards really bring them to life. So they're really quite powerful. But I think it's very personal. I mean, in Faith's case, because you're not very keen on Crowley, Thoth pack may not work. Well, no, I don't think it would work for you at all, right? Because actually, there's point is buying a pack that isn't going to work for you, you'll never use it. So, I think the key thing with any tarot pack is it's got to be visually, if you're going to make use of it as opposed to just have it around the house, it's got to be visually appealing in some way. So aesthetically, have a look at cards, and if there's no reason to have, which is the one you mainly use, Faye, is it?
Well, I do use the Rider-Waite, but I also use the Fairy Tarot.
Yeah,
well.
Yeah. Obviously, I don't know the Fairy Tarot, I can't advise you on that. But the Rider-Waite is the one I've used all my life. Really, I've augmented it with the Thoth pack, but the one I feel like the one I most relate to is the Rider-Waite. That's the one Ernest taught me to use, and that's the Tom did. So I think it's an amazing pack.
Me too, and I used it in Guatemala, and I probably just need to use it more and pick it up. And I know that one the most. I just thought it might be interesting to go back to the origin.
Yeah, it can be. I certainly found it interesting to do that and to look at the origins of those cards and sort of because the Marseille pack give you, if you like, a sense of the archetypes before they are consciously adapted in that way.
I think I found a copy of the Book of Tokens as a PDF, so I could send that out.
Oh, brilliant! If you found that, great. I was looking for that earlier on. I couldn't find it.
So it's filled, apparently. So I'll send that.
Oh, lovely! So if you found that, that would be great for people to have, because it's not a very easy book to find. Oh, well done. Thank you, Holly. You were going to say something.
Yeah. How do you use the cards? What do you mean by using the cards?
I'll hold an issue. Well, there's all kinds of ways. I use them in meditation, because I just will just contemplate them. I'll lay them out in mandala form sometimes. I will use them, I'll have an issue in my mind and I'll shuffle the cards and I'll draw a few to contemplate. Because I use them, I don't really use them to predict the future, because I use them more to clarify my thinking, give myself contemplation images. I suppose what I don't really do is use them for divination that much. Because I don't really do much divination. Not really my thing. I I do use them a lot for contemplation, because I've used that's principally how I've used the cards. Is I feel like they're like a tree of life I carry around in my pocket. So I will lay them out sometimes and contemplate different aspects of the tree. And
I think there's a difference between divination and using them to see what sort of, they kind of help you bring things from the unconscious, don't they?
They can do that, yes, they can. I don't use a lot. I mainly use them as meditation images. I will sometimes do that, mainly I'm using them as kind of image doorways or contemplation subjects, really. I mean, that's and in a way, that is partly how I got into using the Marseille pack, because I decided to strip away the overlay, the occult overlay, and just work with the very crude images of the Marseille pack and the which have almost, I mean, the tramps have not a lot of detail, but the numeral cards have no detail at all. They're just a number and a sword or a wand or a cup. I found that useful as for contemplation at one time.
Mm. I think that's what I mean about them helping you access things from the unconscious, in that when you contemplate the image on the card, rather than trying to sort of think, well, what does it mean, blah blah blah, things that you hadn't expected might come or things you had. And it's not about predicting or...
No, I agree with you. No,
finding...
Yeah, that's just a very valuable use. What I found is through the Marseille thing, when I was just looking at the... We'll come back to the numerical thing tomorrow when we're all a bit fresher. But because the numeral cards are just like 10 ones or 8 ones or 7 ones, so getting and contemplating the... if you like, the archetype of the number in relationship to the elemental quality, they were quite useful for that, because there's no other distraction in it, really. It was just a bare kind of image. So that's where I think Marseille can be useful sometimes. Okie dokie, we're at the end. We've done a lot of work today, so have a good evening, all of you, and a good supper, and see you in the morning at 10 o'clock I know I've put you through it a bit today, because I've thrown a lot of stuff at you, because we've been dealing with a powerful subject, but the tomorrow will be a gentler day, with a bit more background in it, so...
Enjoyed it all. I like the angels.
You like the angels. Oh, the angels will be there tomorrow as well. We'll continue, because we're going to continue to work through air and earth tomorrow. But also there'll be a bit more lighter bits as well, really. So thank you guys. Have a good evening. I'll see you at 10 o'clock tomorrow. Okay. Bye bye now.